From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. A new audit of the Fort Myers Police Department performed by an outside agency paints a picture of dysfunction. Officers were encouraged to harass communities rather than build relationships. There are allegations of favoritism and reports from personnel saying they felt targeted for speaking up with policies that would shift like sands in the wind, leading to low morale. We'll talk with one of the authors of the audit and a local reporter who's covered crime in Fort Myers and the changes within the department. Plus, the Fort Myers Film Festival begins next week and showcases work by filmmakers from around the world, including filmmakers from South Florida. We'll talk with the organizer of this year's festival about the varied entries and with two local filmmakers about documentaries they'll be showcasing at the event. First, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. It's the seventh season for the Fort Myers Film Festival. It kicks off in a week from today. And this year it's offering 17 feature-length films and more than 40 shorts. Coming up in the second half of our show, we'll talk with organizers about what to expect at this year's festival and with two filmmakers from South Florida whose documentaries will be screened at the festival. But first, a report released this week takes a deep look into the Fort Myers Police Department after years of unsolved violent crimes and repeated failures to stem drug trafficking. It has uncovered department busied with internal strife, conflict, and allegations of intimidation, while outwardly officers were being told to be tough on citizens, writing tickets for the smallest infractions in order to statistically look like they were doing a good job. But this led to numerous complaints of harassment from the community, a growing distrust of police, and ultimately a lack of cooperation that has stopped serious investigations in their tracks or from even happening at all. The team brought in to look at the city's police force was the Free Group International, an independent firm headed by a former director of the FBI. One of the people who worked on this particular investigation is Tom Larned. He's a former FBI agent himself and an investigator, and he joins us now in the studio. Thank you for being here.
Nice to be here, Julie.
Also with us today is reporter Cody Delaney from the Fort Myers News Press, who's been reporting on Fort Myers for a few years. Cody, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We're talking about the recent audit of the Fort Myers Police Department today. If you have any thoughts or comments, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Excuse me. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Cody, I want to start with you. You've covered the Fort Myers Police Department for a while. Can you give me some background as to the outgoing police chief, the interim police chief, and now this audit? How did all this come about?
Well, this all started with the termination of former Police Chief Doug Baker. He was fired in August of 2015, stemming from an internal affairs investigation where he was alleged to have lied during that investigation. Interim Chief Dennis Eads stepped in. He filled that role for a year. Under his leadership, he brought on all kinds of different things. Task force, he was trying to open up more community policing. And then the city ended up going somewhere else. They ended up choosing Chief Derek Diggs from Toledo, Ohio, and that selection was made last August.
And then the city decided to take a look internally and look at its department.
Right, and that decision came after my reporting on racial discrimination and retaliation going on within the department. Weeks after that report came out, the new city manager, Saeed Kazemi, told council, hey, we should look into this. This has been going on for years. I want to hire an outside agency, which they did, and Free Group came in and performed that audit.
And that's the point at which Tom Larned with Free Group International, as you mentioned, your organization gets a call to do an investigation into the department, and this started as a new police chief. Chief Diggs was just starting to step into that position, correct?
Right. We were actually approved by the city council back in May of 2016, but it was determined that we would wait until the new chief arrived before we would begin our audit, so we were sure that he was on board. And it was really critical to the audit because the chief was fully supportive and gave us access that you wouldn't typically have. We had unescorted access within the department. We could provide confidentiality to officers so they could speak candidly, and we didn't have to speak in the department. We could meet them at offsites. So waiting for the chief really helped to open up some information for us.
Well, it seems like perfect timing because he hadn't been there. So what you're going to uncover with things that happened previous to his being there.
Exactly.
And it's also good for him to know what he's walking into too.
Right. The city manager wanted him to have a roadmap for, so that he could address whatever issues might be there, because there had been these swirling rumors and there had been reporting regarding a variety of mistrust issues.
So first you started by looking at the complaints that the community had been filing, complaints of harassment being stopped without sufficient justification. Did the number of complaints that were coming in surprise you?
I think what surprised me the most was that there was a disconnect between the internal affairs process and the citizens' response system, which had been created really to address all citizen complaints to the city manager. But it was being used a lot to provide citizen complaints regarding the police department. And as we reviewed all of those complaints, we saw this pattern that there was a lot of complaints of harassment. A lot of these police departments who undergo reviews by the Department of Justice, it has to do with excessive force. We didn't see a lot of that. It was more people being stopped at a church, their grandmothers being stopped, and it was the sort of things where people felt like they were being antagonized.
Once the complaints came in, did you find that they had been handled correctly?
So that was where we ended up spending a lot of time, was trying to analyze the department's policies to determine whether these complaints were being processed properly, and whether the policies were good, and whether the complaints were being evaluated consistent with what the policies said that they would be done.
And the policies changed a lot.
We saw a lot of that, of policies changing, and I think some of that was the department was trying to be more efficient, and they were trying to find a way to relieve some of the burden on the investigators. But at the same time, it created the perception that they were avoiding or that they were changing policies in order to provide preferential treatment to certain individuals.
So basically, and the investigative process is intriguing to me. You probably had to set up like a grid saying this is what the policy was at this time and this is the complaint that came in at this time and here's how – whether or not it actually matched up.
That's what made it really complicated, is that the policies changed so often that when we would look at a specific allegation, we had to then go see at the time that the event occurred what policy was in place, and then whether it had been properly addressed consistent with that existing policy.
So you uncovered that officers were being told that they had to go out there and be tough and issue citations for the tiniest infractions. What kind of impact did you see that have on the relationship between the police and the community?
Yeah, I think that that's a really important point, because that information came from officers themselves, officers that wanted to see a change in the department, and they wanted to make sure that that we understood that part of the reason for this sort of antagonistic relationship was prior policies that are no longer in place, but that had created a history where people in the community felt that they were being harassed and that they became hostile towards the police department, and it just sort of escalated over time.
Well, and the worst hostility is the silence. And Cody, I mean, you've covered crime in the area, and there's been a lot of finger pointing. As soon as, you know, they hit a roadblock, you would hear, well, the community is not cooperating and nobody's standing up and saying anything. So is that part of this report surprising to you at all?
No, it's not surprising. And you mentioned that because oftentimes that was the first thing that came out of their mouths after somebody was shot and killed. You know, we need somebody to come out and talk. We need X, Y, or Z. But this report really showed that the investigative bureau was not only understaffed, but they were overwhelmed with all the things that they were dealing with. And a lot of these investigators were dealing with pressures to solve these crimes in 2 weeks or less. And what was happening is not only were they unable to solve these crimes, but the community was feeling left, you know, forgotten. And that was creating this retaliatory environment where you had families arming themselves and forming gangs just for the protection of it.
Almost completely lawless, where, I mean, there was like a breakdown where they just feel like the police weren't able to be effective, and so they were going to protect themselves.
Right. It was the antithesis of what they wanted to happen.
Yeah. Well, Tom, next in your investigation was the interview process. After you looked through all the different complaints and then tried to line everything up with what policies were in place, you interviewed employees in the department, and they made some pretty disheartening allegations, saying that policies were changed or amended in order for leadership to play favorites with different people or to let people slide by based on different policy changes. And now your report, I want to point out, it simply says that these are allegations, not that they did in fact happen. But what did that feeling do to the morale of the department?
Yeah, I appreciate your comments because I think that there's a misperception out there since our report has been released that we have concluded that all of these events and actions took place. We didn't draw those conclusions. We weren't asked to do that. We simply stated that we were told this, and that created this perception that there was favoritism and that people were being disciplined unfairly or being allowed to get away with misconduct unfairly, and that created this feeling that there were two departments within one, where you had cliques essentially of people who were the in crowd and those who were the out crowd.
Mm-hmm. So, did you end up making any policy recommendations going forward?
We did. Part of the problem with the policy changes were that they appeared to have been done without proper coordination with the city attorney's office, for example, and outside counsel. So, what we recommended is a review of the policies by employment law experts, the city attorney, and to make sure that anytime policies are changed, that they're reviewed by people to make sure these are the right policies to address the problem we're trying to address.
And look at the inspiration behind them.
Exactly. And then once you have a good policy, you have to follow it.
And stick with it instead of changing it every other day.
Well, if it needs to be changed, change it, but do it through the right process. Don't just change it for expediency.
Mm-hmm. Cody, had you heard from any officers about this kind of thing with the favoritism and,
Yeah. I mean, this has been going on for, as long as I've been here. I came here in April 2015, but even longer. I mean, based on what I've been hearing, this has been going on for decades. This goes as far back as the 70s. And my initial reporting focused on the racial discrimination aspect, that people felt that they were passed over for promotions or training opportunities specifically because of their race. But one thing I found interesting in this report was the Free Group found that it wasn't necessarily racism, but it was the preferential treatment. It was based on relationships with former chiefs or who you were within this in-group or this clique, as he described. But yes, this has been going on, and with my sources and conversations, this has been brought up over and over and over again.
Workplace drama is just the worst, and then when you have little cliques and stuff, and then when it's the police doing it, that's when it becomes dangerous. It becomes a problem.
Right, tasked with making a city safe.
Yeah. We're talking about a recent audit of the Fort Myers Police Department with Tom Larned from the Free Group International, the investigative group that was hired to conduct the audit, and with investigative journalist Cody Delaney from the Fort Myers News Press. You can become part of our conversation also by calling 1-877-428-8255. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU, using the hashtag of GCL. Well, Tom Larned, you mentioned to me on the phone that it's really unusual for a city to allow this kind of information to be public. Usually, they have a non-disclosure where nobody's going to talk about the investigation that happens. Do you feel like the transparency here is part of an effort to start over?
Exactly. And I think the mayor, the city manager, city attorney, city council deserve a lot of credit because they knew that there was going to be some really harsh information in this report. They asked us to find harsh information. And as a result, the report doesn't talk about all the good things that the police department's doing. But we try to make it clear that the level of cooperation that we got from the police officers told us that they really care. Again, it's very unusual for a report like this to be made public unless it's compelled through a Department of Justice court order.
It's just strange that they're just letting the dirty laundry just kind of hang out there.
I think that they wanted to get it all out there so they could move forward, address it and move forward. And I really think that that's what the strategy is now, is to say, okay, we see that we've had some issues in the past, but we're moving forward. And the chief and the city manager have both embraced all of our recommendations and intend to as they can find the funding for it, they intend to implement them.
Yeah. Cody, are you surprised the city is being so candid about all these things?
I'm not. And like Tom said, the city, they approach this as a way to let's air it out, let's move it on, and let's move forward as a city. And I think Councilman Forrest Banks said it the best. He says, people think that we're supposed to be surprised about this, and we're not. We knew things were going to come out that were going to be bad, and we just have to address them face on and move forward.
And part of your report, Tom, talks about a lack of resources and a buyout in which a number of seasoned officers left the department. And that Have they recovered from that?
No, they haven't. They have hired a few folks in the last year, but part of what happened is they lost all of their senior training officers. They lost their sergeants, lieutenants, captains. They lost their experienced people who could mentor others. And so people had to be promoted into roles that they weren't ready to fill and, you know, did the best they could with limited training, limited resources. But it was really a difficult environment for them, and I think that that's part of why the chief wants to bring in two deputy chiefs to try to sort of start over, evaluate. They have really good leaders at all levels of the department, officers, sergeants. They have some really good people. The chief just needs to figure out what's the right fit for each of them.
Mm-hmm. And Cody, have you heard anything from any of your sources within the department about how things changed after that 2008 buyout?
Not specifically about the buyout, but mainly what I'm hearing from my sources is related to Chief Diggs and his leadership. I'm hearing a lot about a push to change the culture within the department. Apparently, he has a banner hanging across different areas of the department saying, you know, it's about changing the mindset. It's about changing how the community views the police and how the police view the community. And it's that kind of culture change that he's trying to instill in his department from the top down.
Yeah, we're going to have Chief Diggs on the show tomorrow. Unfortunately, he couldn't be here today for this show, but he will be here tomorrow. And so I'm looking forward to talking to him a little bit about the changes that he's implementing and how he's doing it, because it seems like it's a bit of a hole to dig out of. I mean, it's been years in the making, this developing of mistrust. So it's going to be a long road ahead.
Right. And I think he has the advantage in that respect because he's coming from Toledo. He's coming from with an outside perspective of how things worked prior with his experience. So having that fresh perspective, having that outsider's view on things going on in the department, I think gives him the step up.
Yeah. Tom, you also mentioned in the report the intelligence base was inadequate with antiquated systems that didn't really communicate with each other and a records management system that was incredibly time-consuming for the officers and even for you in your investigation when you were trying to sort through all the community complaints. Is that kind of a dangerous situation where information that's not being shared can slip through the cracks and then create a problem or a snag in investigation?
Sure. That lack of connectivity could allow for information to come in that doesn't properly get to prosecutors that they're required to analyze and evaluate whether the defense is entitled to it. In the complaint process, we saw that often where complaints came in, but because the internal affairs system was not connected to the citizens' response system, the complaints were never investigated. And obviously there was an assumption by the complainant, by the city council, by the city that these matters were being addressed, but they were slipping through the cracks in some cases.
And not getting noticed, which then adds again to that feeling of being ignored that has been part of the problem all along. So it's just yet another drip in the bucket for that. And one of the big recommendations is for deputy chiefs, and you mentioned that Chief Diggs is talking about bringing on a couple of deputy chiefs to prevent that information from being siloed out and not shared. Can you tell me about how a deputy chief situation can help that type of situation?
Well, when you have a flat organization, which is what they have, where they have four captains, you don't have really somebody in a position to hold those captains accountable. It's really too much for the chief to do. The chief needs to be the face of the organization. He needs to be out there, working with the people. And he really needs operational people to be overseeing the different components and making sure that all of the operations bureau, the investigations bureau, the professional service bureau, and the support services bureau are all working together for the same goals.
So right as it stood, there was the police chief and then there were the individual captains over different bureaus.
Right.
With little communication between them.
There certainly was a lack of communication between some of them, yes.
And by having a deputy chief as an intermediary between the chief himself and the heads of these four different departments, you thinking that that would aid in that type of communication?
Yes, because they can set direction, set expectations, and hold people accountable.
Yeah. So, and he's looking at doing that?
Yes. It's my understanding that he's moving forward fairly soon on that, but I'll let him address that tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll talk about that tomorrow. So that'll be kind of interesting.
Yeah, the city is actually putting together – city staff is putting together numbers for what it would cost to – higher positions for those. I think it's deputy chiefs, two lieutenants, and some other positions that they actually want to get onto the city agenda on March 6th. So that's something they're trying to address relatively quickly.
Well, funding is always a challenge. So
right.
That'll
right.
be interesting to see how they can work that out.
And keeping those people in those positions is going to be a challenge.
Yeah, retention.
Yeah.
Retention is tough, especially in a transitional situation.
And Julie, if I could just interrupt, when you talk about funding, that's something else that's in our report. This really requires a collective effort to address these issues, and you really need academic folks, business community, health community. You need a lot of people to get involved in this process and support the department and the city in addressing the core issues that are causing this violence. It's not something the police can do by themselves, and obviously the city needs outside funding resources.
Well, we've talked a little bit about task forces, and it seems like everybody wants to form a task force, but they don't seem to be resulting in much. And Cody, you reported on one just a year ago where the Sheriff's Department and the Police Department got together trying to create a task force to get somewhere with this, and it didn't really get anywhere. What happened with that?
Yeah, it didn't get anywhere at all. People were caught up in this task force's effort and pulled over for minor offenses. And really what these officers were doing were looking for reasons to stop them, get inside their car, search their car, and find firearms or drugs to seize. And really what the overall question is, well, why can't we work with outside agencies? What's preventing us from doing that? And the city had been asking that for years, and that's what led to the city organizing this task force with other agencies. And one thing I found interesting about this report was that it found that not only was it coming from the former chief, Doug Baker, not to work with other agencies, but other agencies didn't want to work with the police department because it has too few experienced detectives. The Investigations Bureau lacks leadership and does not operate as a team. So I feel like that was a really big revelation coming out of why the city is unable to do what it's been wanting to do for so long, which is work with outside agencies and get the help it needs.
But it seems like the task force that you mentioned, it just kind of was more of the same, people.
It was more of the same. And really what it was is the city was trying to answer to this growing crowd of complaints and of violent crime going unsolved. And their answer was, okay, let's go out and shake the trees and see what we come up with. And what resulted was a lot of very upset and angry citizens who now don't trust the police department.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller on the line. This is Frederick from Fort Myers. And Frederick, it sounds like you have a pretty serious concern about violence. Tell me what your story is. Frederick, are you there? I think we might have lost Frederick. Oh, I hear a button. Nope. Yeah, we lost Frederick there. So he was calling in, and it sounded like his question was, and it's a question that's interesting. It sounds like he has been involved in violence. Violence was committed upon him. So is there a point at which the police department is held liable in situations where, this kind of retaliatory and arming themselves and feeling that they have to protect themselves, does it ever get to a point where the police department is held liable for the violence that's been happening?
There's still a lot more reporting, a lot more work that needs to be done, and there are many unanswered questions that I'm tracking down, and that is one of the unanswered questions.
Yeah.
Julie, if I could just make a couple comments too, just to be clear, in our report, we did not name anybody. We did not name any chief. We did not, to the extent possible, we didn't want to point the fingers at individuals. We wanted to really focus on these are the issues. These are what we've seen, and these are recommendations for how to move forward. And specifically with the task forces, our concern was that I think there was a great quote by one of the officers who's a member who said that we used a net when we should have used a spear. The task forces weren't adequately focused on identifying the most violent offenders and then working as a group collectively with outside agencies and partnering together and with them amongst themselves to identify the most violent offenders and to remove them from the streets. They established that strategy, but they didn't implement it properly. And there's a variety of reasons for that. But that's really, if you look at a city like Boston that had what's called the PACT program, PACT, They had a very effective strategy that was that did just that, and that's really what Fort Myers needs.
And you said that there are a number of different task forces, but working in not in concert so much, just kind of having their own plan and their own idea, but just not working together.
Yes, within the department itself and outside of the department, and that's something that the chief I know is addressing.
Yeah. And I want to turn now to the audit when it describes an emerging threat, which is gang violence. And we kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. And that's the problem of people having retaliatory type shootings, witnesses who are fearful that the police can't protect them. How does that impact the ability of police to even just go into a community and ask if you know anything?
Yeah, I mean that's sort of the core issue.
That is the main crux of
right.
why we have these unsolved issues.
Right. And so the department needs to have a safe environment where folks can come and provide information, and they need to work with the state attorney and the federal government to find ways to protect these people who are providing information, because obviously once victims and witnesses get intimidated, the entire system collapses, and as you said, families, friends start retaliating because the criminal justice system is not able to address those problems.
And the Florida Public Records Law, tell me about that and how that impacts the ability of someone to be protected and have their name identified. I mean, if I go forward and say, yeah, I saw my neighbor shoot that guy, are they going to know my name?
Yes, and that's been a problem. We've seen instances where people who are witnesses, you know, they're people who saw somebody they care about get hurt. They get marked as snitches when what they are is they're, you know, they're victims of crime, and they have the right to be protected. And friends of the subjects are putting their names on Facebook and, you know, trying to ostracize them, intimidate them, and in some cases hurt them.
It's hard to get a hold of ahead of social media too with things like that. Cody?
Yeah, and to that respect, there is a legislative push to make those names of witnesses exempt from public record. But to counter that argument, if there's a 90-year-old man with, you know, he's sight impaired, hearing impaired, and he's a witness to a murder, the public has a right to know. And the defendant has a right to confront his witnesses.
Yeah.
The defendant has a right to know that this guy can't really see or hear anything, but he – okay, I understand what you're saying. But does it have to use a name? I mean –
I'm not privy to what the exact legislation is. I just know that they are pushing a legislation to make the name of the witness exempt from public record until the conclusion of the trial.
Okay.
So that legislation would not end a prosecutor's obligation to disclose to the defense certain things that are required by the Constitution, such as any exculpatory information. Information that would indicate that a witness might be unreliable, for example, as you said, a prosecutor would still be required to disclose that information.
Okay. So that's interesting, and we'll have to keep an eye on that, what law as it's moving forward through legislature. I'll have to look that one up. That's interesting, but it makes me very nervous for the witnesses who want to say something but then feel like they can't because they're afraid they're going to get hurt.
Yeah, there's an argument to be had on both sides.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a lot of that in Fort Myers.
Exactly.
A ton. I mean, you hear about it every time almost that there's anything that happens.
Right.
So I wanted to ask you just to summarize, Tom, what are the top three recommendations that you have for the Fort Myers Police Department after doing this audit?
I think probably it was to get the deputy chiefs in. I think that it was a priority that they needed to address understaffing. They're working on the communication centers we speak, which is a critical issue. And then I think the issue of establishing good policies, making sure that if we need to change policies that they are vetted properly. And then when we have our good policies in place, make sure that they're being followed.
Mm-hmm. Cody, do you have any what kind of questions do you have after this, after you've read the 70 pages? This was a long report, by the way. After you've read all of that, are there any questions that you feel are just not answered?
Well, yeah, there's tons of questions that aren't answered, and I plan to looking at all of them. But really the biggest thing moving forward, the number one recommendation that's listed on this report was to have the city hire an outside agency to investigate claims of officer misconduct. And just real quickly, officer misconduct making point of officers tipping off drug dealers of potential search warrants coming down the pike.
Those are some allegations.
Allegations, correct. Uh-huh. Officers had been telling the Free Group about this. So, whether the city plans on following that recommendation and getting to the root of these problems.
If I could just respond to that, the recommendation specifically states that we think that the department should ask an outside entity to look at those specific allegations that you're talking about. We did not make a recommendation that they hire somebody to come in and look at all of their internal affairs complaints.
Okay, right. So there were certain internal affairs complaints or allegations that came out that your organization thinks need to be looked at a little bit further.
Yes, and by an outside agency.
Oh, by someone that's not within. Okay. Well, we need to leave it there for now, and I want to thank you, Tom Larned from the Free Group International, for coming in to talk to us about this report. Distilling 70 pages down into a half hour is not so easy, but I appreciate you coming in and helping us wade through that. And also Cody Delaney with the Fort Myers News Press. Thanks for being here, and keep up the good work.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Coming up, the Fort Myers Film Festival kicks off next week, and two South Florida filmmakers are focusing on water quality in our region. We'll look at the festival and talk with the filmmakers coming up next.